Sometimes you feel so alone and overwhelmed, you don't know where to turn. These days, it seems like there is no end to our problems. We invite you to connect with Silent Unity, the 24-hour prayer ministry, where someone is waiting to pray with you right now. Since 1890, Silent Unity has always been there. No judgment or dogma, just someone affirming the best for you. Call 816-969-2000 today. You can also connect online at unityprayervigil.org.
Providing insight and resources for your spiritual journey. Unity Online Radio.
Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions with Paul John Roach, minister of Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Discover the universal principles present in all the world's religions and take an incredible journey to new understanding. Now, here is your host, Paul John Roach.
So hello and welcome to World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. We're exploring ways to live the unitive life where we recognize that in truth we are one. And that's so important in our fractured world where it's pointed out to us every day how separate we are from each other, politically, socially, spiritually. But of course, this is an overlay. The real truth is that we are one. We're on this one planet, this very precious planet together under God. I'm your host, Paul John Roach, coming to you from Unity Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Today we're exploring the subject of clearing emotional clutter, which is mindfulness practices for letting go of what's blocking our fulfillment and transformation. And the author, Donald Altman, is a psychotherapist. He's a former Buddhist monk, and he's also the award-winning author of several books, including 1 Minute Mindfulness and The Mindfulness Code, which was featured on this show back in November 2010. So if you like this particular show, you might want to go back and go to the archives and look up the one from November 2010 talking about The Mindfulness Code. He presents workshops on the subjects that we're talking about today. And mindfulness, and also optimizing health and wholeness. So it's a real pleasure to welcome Donald back to the show.
Thank you, Paul, and it's a pleasure to be here with you again.
You know, we are acquirers, aren't we, in our modern society, whether that be stuff or marriages or baggage of all kinds, and of course emotions. And all these things that we acquire, we live in a consumer society on many levels of that term. The problem with it is, number one, it doesn't give us real happiness because, you know, just because you've got a bunch of stuff mm-hmm. doesn't make you happy. Right. And also, not only that, it gets in the way. Like you say, it becomes clutter. It clutters up our consciousness. So this book is all about how to release that, right? To get back to what's real in us rather than all the things that we attract to ourselves, thinking that that might bring us happiness.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's so easy to have that clutter build up, and it can build up from so many different sources. And it keeps us from really experiencing this moment and the beauty of even the most ordinary things in our lives. And I think it can also impact our relationships, can be very profound when we're able to clear away that clutter.
The one of the systemic diseases, if you like, or diseases of our modern world, is anxiety, isn't it, and stress, and of course that and it manifests physically, but you know, it begins, like we say, you know, in our emotional makeup and everything. It's hard to escape from it, though, isn't it? Because I've noticed in the last maybe 20 years, I mean, society's been busy and fast-paced for millennia, probably. But I don't know if it's just me and I'm getting old and I want to slow down. But it seems to me that everything has become much busier. The pace has accelerated in the last few years. And I think part of that you know, cyberspace, and you talk about that in your book. Is that true for you also, that the things seem to be speeding up?
There's no question about it. I think we are things are speeding up. In fact, I think the danger is that we're becoming more mechanized and more like robots, and it's almost believed that that would be better for us, right? If we could just produce more and be more efficient. And I see that the damage that this is producing in a lot of people who are finding that they you know, when they become more automated like that, they can't keep up the pace and they end up falling apart, or they have a tremendous amount of anxiety. And I think it's a very much a modern-day affliction. It's something that we've always had to struggle with, but I think that the amount of fragmentation of our awareness and our consciousness is greater than ever before, and we need to do a better job of protecting our awareness and our attention, which is really one of the most precious gifts that we possess. And everything out there, from cell phones and the internet, everything's trying to grab that attention and use it, and often not for our own best betterment. So, yeah, I don't think it's just you. I think it's something that is kind of filtered in to our whole culture now, and you see it in healthcare. You see it in a lot of different areas. Or even, you know, I'm a psychotherapist, and I actually train. I go around the country and internationally. I teach therapists how to use these clearing emotional clutter techniques for their clients. And that's why I'm excited to be able to share them here today and to be able to have a book that can give people a step-by-step guide to clearing away this clutter.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think we have a double whammy in the States, actually, because we have the Puritan ethic, number one, which requires that we, you know, we work extremely hard, whatever. And then we also have this hedonistic, strand of culture, which means you got to party hard too. So you know, you got to work hard and party hard. You got no time to rest and relax.
Right. Whereas, people are trying to live like two lifetimes in one lifetime.
Yeah,
and
there we go.
It burns you out.
Whereas, you know, go to Europe and people don't work as long and they relax more, it seems. And yet they're just as productive, you know. And we're noticing that what's worked for the States in previous generations isn't necessarily working for us now. You know, we're dropping down on in many of the measurements that, you know, you measure the health of a society. You talk about the emotional elevator, which is, again, part of this constant up and down stuff, isn't it? What do you mean by the emotional elevator exactly?
Well, and I begin the book with talking about the emotional elevator, and the elevator are all those things. They can be external, they can be in our internal thoughts that move our mood up and down, and we could be chasing the up button on the elevator. When something good happens to us, we get a promotion or somebody compliments us, the elevator goes up, right? But what about then the elevator can go down just as easily, and maybe our friend ignores a text that we just wrote him and didn't respond, or maybe we didn't get that a job promotion. We didn't get the loan for that house that we were looking at. Whatever it is, all these things are moving us up and down. What happens if we attach to that elevator? We want to have only the positives, and we try to avoid the negatives. You're chasing that button pushing, and we got to think about how that can be exhausting, but it also is giving away your control. It's not empowering you. It's really disempowering you and allowing all these things to push your buttons and move your elevator. And I think it does you a disservice in terms of not allowing you to really find fulfillment, right? It's always looking for the next thing that's going to make you feel good. And that our culture is really good with that, this whole idea of retail therapy, for example, Paul, where you're having people believe that, if when I just get that next thing, I'll feel good. And we might feel good for a while, but then that novelty of that new thing, that new relationship, that new house, that new whatever wears off, and then you're left wanting more again, and it becomes a treadmill, sometimes called the hedonic treadmill. And it can create, and I've had people who were really afflicted with, sometimes it's called affluenza, a social disease of wanting more, and when enough is never enough, And that can be very devastating for people. And I've worked with clients who had lost everything because they went into debt and they were always craving more. And they forgot about what was really important in life, which were their relationships.
Well, unfortunately, we've created an economic and political system that requires this. You know, it's, everything is seen in terms of growth points, right? The whole stock market is based on there being more and more commodities being sold, you know, and how many houses are built and how many stores are opened, and et cetera, et cetera. So it's kind of an inbuilt sickness in our society, I think, that, you know, we become dependent on this, and everything falls apart if we don't, you know, have enough growth per year in a particular sector of the economy or in a nation, et cetera. And,
right.
You know, and that's, you know, we got to shift away from that, I think, eventually, because, you know, I've joked in services that I've given here at the church, you know, that when I get something new, you know, it's kept close to me, you know, it's on my bedside table. And then after a few weeks, you know, it's in another part of the house. And then a few more weeks, I've forgotten where it is. And then after that, maybe it's in the trash, you know. So, this is stuff, you know. When the new stuff, we love it, don't we? But then after a while, oh, well,
yeah.
I need something new. What's cool, and what your book invites us to do this, and that is to relook, right, to look at the simple things or to look at the possessions that you have and enjoy them anew, you know, because just because they've been around for a while, I love to do this. I like to collect things, and some of the things I collect, I love to look at them again as if I just bought them.
Yeah.
And it gives me great pleasure, you know, because then I don't have to buy another thing. I can just go back and enjoy what I already have. And I think that's part of what you're advising us to do, isn't it? Is to look again, to see with new eyes, if you like.
Absolutely. And it's a kind of revaluing what you have. It's reappreciating it. And this is a form of gratitude, actually, in which you can give thanks for what's already in your life. And when you revalue something, you're not diminishing its value, and you're able to extract more benefit from it. So even if it's something you've had around for a long time, you could still appreciate what it does for you and how it adds to your life. And this is about what I like to think of as fidelity to the moment, appreciating ordinary little things, faithfulness to this moment. And you can think about that in terms of how we're always multitasking, right? So you don't really have any faithfulness to the moment. It's just you're going from one thing to another, instead of really just allowing yourself to do this one thing and be present with it. So committing yourself 100%, maybe to, if you're sitting in a chair as you're listening to this, just commit yourself 100% to the experience of sitting, feeling your body in the chair, noticing where you're making contact, feeling your feet on the floor, noticing your posture, coming into a nice rhythm of the breath, just being here. This is good enough. Your body knows how to do this, and why not enjoy it, sit with that? Or anything that you're doing. Could be a chore around the house. Instead of trying to resist it and fight it, which is where a lot of our suffering comes in, resisting those little moments that are, we're already here. We're doing this thing anyway. Instead of resisting it and wanting to be somewhere else, what about just being present with whatever you're doing? That chore, cleaning the dishes. You could just clean the dishes. You could notice how present you are as you're cleaning, as you're moving your hands, appreciating the artisanship in those utensils and in the dishes. You know, this is something that the ancient Japanese tea ceremony, for centuries, what they've been practicing doing. And they will share a cup of tea with them, you know, with others, or you could do this with your own cup. And really just really appreciating everything about the utensils, the pot where the tea is steamed, and just taking a sip, really letting yourself really taste that sip, right? But not doing it as an afterthought to get on to the next thing. And so this fidelity to the breath, you could be faithful to this breath, you could be faithful to just walking when you walk. And I've been guilty of it. I've experienced, you know, times when I've been walking out to my mailbox, my mind's a million miles somewhere else, all the things I have to do today, and right?
Of course.
But I really, when I'm able to come back and just be present with the walking, it's incredible, everything that I can see in my environment that I was just blind to.
Well,
Mother Teresa talks about it. She says, you know, and be faithful in the small things, and that's where your strengths really lie.
Well, I think, you know, noticing when you're not being present, when you're not being faithful, can be as equally powerful, can't it? It's like, it's not forcing ourselves, I got to be present right now, you know, and
right.
Otherwise I'm failing. It's noticing the times that you're not, and that can be as that can be as much an opening, and you call it inner Facebooking. You know, it's looking at things but not judging them, right? It's because I think the relaxing and accepting what is brings us back to center. So even if we're noticing that we're not present, that in itself is clarifying something for us. That is awareness.
Because
I think our society, you know, we always want to go up the elevator. You know, when we're going down, that's bad.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really matter whether you're going up or down, as long as you're noticing it and being mindful about it. You know, that's the key. It's not what's happening; it's how you respond to it. Right? What your awareness is of it.
That's very, very true. And so, you know, it's kind of like accepting all of our experiences in life. And, not having a fight against it, but but seeing it and just noticing, okay, I wasn't present here. You don't want to fall into the trap of, I've got to be present all the time. Nobody's going to be able to do that.
Right.
We do go into autopilot sometimes, and there may even be a benefit to doing some of that. But we can notice when we are really at odds with what our deeper purpose is. You know, if you're spending 5 hours sitting in front of the TV, and actually the average American, I think, spends about over 5 hours, adults, in front of some kind of a screen every day. For 8 to 18-year-olds, it's about 7.5 hours a day. And if you can notice that, you know, what else could I be doing? Am I really extracting all the benefits out of watching this? Maybe I'm getting some benefit from it. Maybe there's something else I could do that could be very satisfying for me and maybe get me out of that chair, get me a little movement going, and make me feel better. And so it's about balance.
You mentioned in your book about gambling, you know, the gambler doesn't necessarily want to win, but they're in the comfort zone when they're gambling, and they feel cozy and protected. I think it's the same, and you make that correlation too. It's the same with you know, your Facebook or your iPhone. It's not necessarily that you're obsessed with what's on it. It's just the idea of doing it in the first place is comforting. You're in your comfort zone. And so it becomes an addictive behavior, if you like. And as I was reading your book this morning, I was noticing how, you know, every so often I'd put it down and I'd pick up my cell phone, you know, and I thought, well, why am I doing this? This is crazy. You know, I've become addicted. I've become addicted to it. And so, instead of watching myself do that, you know, well, the reason I was looking at it probably was to check my emails and my, you know, because a lot of what we do now is you know, on the iPhone. In my office is the iPhone, so that's my that's my rationalization, you know, for addiction, I guess. So it's hard, really, isn't it, to be discreet about this, because you know everything flows into everything else now. A lot of people work from home, for instance, and so they're on the computer a lot and so on. So it's tough, you know, sometimes.
Yeah, I think that we have to have some healthy boundaries with technology. Technology is a real blessing, and it's amazing what it can allow us to do. And at the same time, we need to spend some face-to-face time with people in our lives. We need to sit with nature. And there's so much that just sitting with nature can provide for us. I'm always reminded of George Washington Carver. People think of him as the guy that had all these inventions with the peanuts, kind of like the Charles Edison of the peanut. But somebody once asked him, they said, you must be a great scientist. You discovered all these things. And he said, well, I'm not so sure about that. I go out at 4 a.m. and I sit and I commune with the plants. And he said, if you sit with anything long enough and show it your love and sit in silence with it, it will share with you all of its secrets. Isn't that beautiful?
And that's beautiful concept,
so
isn't it?
We need to sit more. We need to let nature inform us and tap into some of that wisdom that's there for us. And that could be very nourishing.
Well, this is how all the mystics, you know, came to their understandings, because they were willing to be present to what is. And now we're finding modern science is corroborating a lot of their understanding. You know, some of the sages from India, for instance, you know, understood atomic structure and all kinds of things that they had no way of verifying scientifically, but they knew them intuitively from their contemplation, exactly what you're talking about. Listen, we're at the break. I'm with Donald Altman. He's created another fascinating book. It's called Clearing Emotional Clutter. I don't think there's one person on the planet that couldn't use this book. So I invite you to go get yourself a copy. It's a really excellent book of practical advice. And when we come back after the break, we're going to create a beautiful garden of thought. I think that's a nice idea, isn't it? How do we do that? Create a beautiful garden of thought. So join us in a couple of minutes after these messages from Unity.
Wouldn't you like to share the programs that inspire you most with audiences around the world? That's easier than ever with mobile giving. Just text Unity Radio to 72727 and help us continue offering spiritual programs that change lives.
In his new book, What If Godzilla Just Wanted a Hug?, Daryl Fusaro emphasizes the positive effects of applying Unity principles in everyday situations. Laura Harvey, editor of Daily Word magazine, exclaims Daryl Fusaro shares his life lessons with inspiring creativity. This book is encouraging, funny, and heartwarming, a combination I highly recommend. As co-host of Unity Online Radio's Funniest Thing with Daryl and Ed, Daryl's old-school charm and no-nonsense approach to spirituality keep a global audience laughing and inspired. What If Godzilla Just Wanted a Hug? Is loaded with Daryl's hilarious, award-winning illustrations and packs his wit and wisdom into easy-to-digest, bite-sized stories of how he transforms chaos into tranquility and succeeds in the entertainment business by doing the opposite of everyone else. What If Godzilla Just Wanted a Hug is a pocket Bible encouraging the talented and timid to trust their gut, act on their intuition, and step out boldly. Even if you just bought it for the chapter titles and Daryl Fusaro's illustrations alone, you'd be getting more than your money's worth with this book. Author and film critic Sister Rose Pucati says, spending time with Fusaro's stories will leave you no choice but to smile and carry on. Oh, he forgot to mention he hangs out with a group of nuns, but then, if he had, it would have necessitated a change to some of his more colorful adjectives. Have fun ordering your copy of What If Godzilla Just Wanted a Hug today on Amazon.com.
I will leave this world as it is.
The world is full of voices, advertising, television, politics, colleagues, family, and friends. All are too happy to tell us how to live. In all of that noise, it's easy to miss the one voice that matters, your own soul. What would happen if you could hear that voice? Imagine the clarity, confidence, and courage that would be yours and the life you could create. Join Janet Connor, best-selling author of Writing Down Your Soul, The Lotus and the Lily, and Your Soul Wants Five Things, as she and her guests explore how to hear the call of the soul and create the soul-directed life. Live Thursday at 1 p.m. Central, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Go inside to find my God.
You've been listening to World Spirituality with host Reverend Paul John Roach. To learn more about Reverend Paul John Roach, visit his website, pauljohnroach.com. Or if you have questions, email him at pauljohnroach@yahoo.com. We now return to World Spirituality.
All right, welcome back to today's show. I'm with Donald Altman. We're talking about his new book, Clearing emotional clutter. It's mindfulness practices to let go of what's blocking us and helping us to gain a new fulfillment in our lives, a sense of transformation, not being stuck. One of the chapters in the book talks about shifting to the beautiful garden of thought. In other words, we have the power to move beyond self-denigrating and hampering ways of thinking and feeling and move to a new way of thinking and feeling. So tell us about what this beautiful garden of thought is, because I love that. I love that title.
Oh, thank you. And well, one of the first things, if you're going to cultivate a garden, you have to watch for the weeds. And as a good gardener knows, you have to be kind of vigilant and look at what weeds are there. And the weeds are the kind of stories we might be telling ourselves. We know that from scientists tell us we can have as many as up to 75,000 thoughts a day, about 25 thoughts a second. Now, the Buddha actually thought we could have up to 3,000 thoughts per second. It's pretty amazing. But how many of those thoughts you have in the course of a day tell you something really profound about yourself? How many are accurate thoughts? On the contrary, how many are maybe just toxic thoughts or old conditioned thoughts, habitual thoughts, or automatic thoughts that come up that really don't define you or tell you really very much about yourself and who you really are? So to sculpt the beautiful garden of strengths, I think it's important to start thinking about your story in a new way. And if I could just tell you the story of a man I saw. He came to see me, was severely depressed. He'd lost his job. And what he told me was, he said, he had his own business. He said, I lost my business. He said, things aren't going to work out for me because I don't know how to interview well. I barely use a computer. The economy isn't good. And I listened to his story, and I said, well, I said, you've got a lot of really great reasons why you can't move forward. Would you mind putting together a top 10 list for me? And he kind of looked at me and was like curious because he liked Letterman, had a top 10 list at the time, so he said, okay. And he came back and he pulled out this yellow sheet of paper and he said, oh, I brought my top 10 list. I said, well, great, tell me about that. And he said, well, first I've got to tell you something that happened. He said, I was looking at this top 10 list and he said, I had this epiphany. And I said, really, what was that? And he said, I realized that this is how my mother thinks. How she perceives things, how she has a negative filter in viewing things and interpreting and predicting things are going to turn out badly. And he said, I don't want to think like that anymore. So he found that he had actually adopted his family's thinking style. It wasn't even his own. Isn't that amazing, right?
Well, it is amazing, but it doesn't surprise me because,
we talk about
imprinting. We're imprinting everything that we pick up from,
That's right. It's very much like imprinting. And so so to create that new story, I like to have people start by looking at their strengths. So let me say what I mean by that. Our strengths can be all the little things that we do in the course of a day that we're not even aware of. So, for example, we're in a very critical culture, so it's easy to find what's wrong. And sometimes it's easy to take for granted the good things we do. So just think about something you do in the morning. So you get up, you brush your teeth, take a shower, get something to eat, and climb in the car. So right there, you've done a tremendous amount of work of self-care. You've taken care of yourself. It's one of your strengths. You've shown organization in how you were able to get up in the morning. You've shown discipline by getting up at a time that maybe got you to work. And so a lot of people think, well, these are just my routine. But actually, it's beyond that. It's actually a strength. And not everybody's able to do all those things. So if you took your dog out for a walk, for example, that's the strength of kindness for others. If you made it to work on time, you could think of that as the strength of timeliness and respect for others. And so it goes on and on. I even say, if you went to the shopping mall and you went back out and in that big sea of cars, you're able to find your car, that's the strength of memory, isn't it?
Absolutely, especially as you get older.
absolutely. So what I want people to do is to think about a daily event Maybe you go to an appointment, or you, you know, just go to the office. And in your daily story, I actually have a way of guiding people through looking at and identifying their strengths, you know, by talking about what their stresses were, how they overcame those stressors, how did they get to somewhere on time, right? Even thinking about how they were able to, get through their own personal history about doing something, maybe their history of getting on the freeway. What did they do to balance themselves out? Did they have a centering ritual? Did they listen to calming music in the car? Did they put on certain clothes that made you feel good? You may not have thought about a lot of these things, but you're actually finding ways to center yourself, and you need to give yourself credit for that. In other words, so you really are planting, beginning to plant a garden of thought and a story about your strengths.
Go ahead.
Well, I was also going to say one great little practice that anyone can do, and so I have all these lifestyle skill tools in this book. It's really a step-by-step guide to clearing clutter. And one of those tools is to identify your top three strengths, and even if you have one, that's good enough, and then put that strength, apply it one time a day for an entire week, writing down at the end of the day what it made you feel like, how did it maybe impact another person positively, and then, you know, these are small actions, but they're important actions to take, and they can take root and help move you into a more fulfilling life that I think we all deserve.
Well, you know, it's interesting what you say, because every morning I take the dog for a walk, and I do mm-hmm. various morning routines, and I always check in on myself that I've done these things, and not in a obsessive compulsive way, but in the sense that it's a sense of order in my life, you know, that I've accomplished those things and I've created a good foundation on which to build the rest of my day. And, you know, if I wake up and I'm hassled and harried and I'm not that mindful, you know, then my day is not going to work out quite so well. So I like to have these simple accomplishments done, if you like, that make me feel good so that I can build on that. So, you know, I think mm-hmm. they work in that way. Also, isn't it about elegance? It's about elegance and graciousness, isn't it, how we approach our lives? When I was in Japan last mm-hmm. year, they didn't just throw the credit card back at you or put it down on the table or whatever in a totally unmindful way, which some people do in the States. Without fail, they would hand it like a gesture of graciousness to you, and look in your eyes as they did so. So it was a holy transaction, if you like. And, you know, okay, they were just giving you your credit card back, but what they were really doing was thanking you for the transaction, you know, for that we have done something together. And it's exactly what you're talking about. And it was beautiful because it made you feel good, you know. Whereas when somebody, you know, cursorily throws it down on the counter, you don't feel respected, you know. Then you have to try and get it up from there or whatever. And it's the moment has been missed. So I'm a big proponent of having moments like that, because I think that could make such a difference to harried Westerners, you know, to come back to some kind of gratitude to life.
Well, absolutely, because we're... look at all the little in-between moments that inhabit our day. And, you know, it's easy to get fixed on the outcome, that big thing at the end of the, you know, that thing I'm saving for, or that these different goals that we have. But yet, there's all the in-between time. And that's where we live most of our lives. And how do we make those, like you say, make them sacred and make them special and meaningful?
Well,
where we spend our time.
And I know you're a friend with Rick Hansen, who's done work on this, and and the idea of epigenetics as well. You know, the idea that, and other people have written on this, the biology of belief, you know, Bruce Chilton, whatever. And, you know, the idea that our thoughts and our emotions are actually influencing our genes, right? We are We tend to think the old school thinking is that, you know, this is what you have to live with. This is your DNA and I'm stuck with it. But now, right. Now we're understanding that it's fluid and flexible, right? So depending on what we feed it, literally food and emotional and mental food, it's changes its characteristics for us.
It's really amazing when you think about it that your epigenetics, so that you have your genome, and that's the kind of the hardwiring, but the epigenome is kind of like the software that tells that hardwiring what to do. And so our gene expression is changing actually moment by moment through the interactions we're having with others. So if you're able to communicate in a creative, in a free way, in a caring way with somebody, that's going to change your gene expression as compared to if you're being cynical or defensive, right?
Right.
You know, there's even been research to show that if you go to bed lonely at night, for example, or with some negative emotion, that will affect your cortisol load when you wake in the morning. So it brings in this whole idea of our own responsibility for our own health, but also the idea that this how we're changing our genetic expression is actually inheritable. So we're learning that we may actually have a disposition to things because of our parents or our grandparents and so on. But we can change it, and that's the beautiful thing, is that we don't even for people that have a very short temper, who knows, that might be an epigenetic trait that's passed down, but it doesn't mean you're stuck with that. And the beauty is that by watching your emotions and just having some space from that, constructively distancing, just noticing what's happening in that moment, you're actually rewiring and changing yourself at the cellular level. So it's very empowering.
Very powerful, isn't it? I love that idea. Because it shows how creative we are, you know, that everything's fluid, just as the Tao teaches us, you know, that nothing is fixed, everything's flowing. I remember, you know, my dad felt good because he didn't beat me, you know, where his father beat him with a strap, you know, but he didn't want to beat me, and that was his breakthrough for his lifetime. But he was still very angry and died young. My breakthrough was I didn't have to live like my dad, you know, being very anxious and angry, and didn't have to die young. And I've, you know, lived many more years than he did so far, hopefully a few more. But, you know, not to be better than, but to say, you know, I don't want to do it like he did. You know, I don't want to follow that program, that imprinting. You know, that worked, didn't work well for him, and I don't want to repeat it. And I think there can be times in our lives when we come to that awareness, don't we? Say, I'm not going to be like that anymore. You know, I'm not going to buy into that. And there's a tremendous freedom that comes. You know, I'm going to do a new thing. And there's nothing like doing a new thing, I think. It's extremely powerful.
It could also help us have compassion for that person, too.
Oh, absolutely.
Struggle and to say, oh, okay, I know how they feel.
Yes.
It doesn't feel good. But I can have the tools, and for whatever reason they didn't have, but I can change it.
And I feel great compassion for my dad. You know, it's not that I didn't like him, but I just didn't want to be that kind of person. I mean, he gave me many gifts, but those particular ones weren't the ones I wanted to take on. You know, I don't want to leave the show before we talk about the three questions because, I know time can get away from us, but I thought that was a really fascinating part of the book, and it's a lovely story about a king, right? And the three questions were, what's the best time to do each thing? Who are the most important people that one should work with? And what is the most important task to do at all times? And of course, he finds the answers, not necessarily because somebody tells him, but because events happen, experiences happen that confirm the answer to these three questions. And, of course, that's life itself. It's not always somebody telling you. Even if they did tell you, you probably wouldn't be able to hear it. But when it happens to you and you have awareness, then you really internalize it, don't you? Because it's like, oh, yeah, okay, I've experienced that in my life. And, of course, tell us about it anyway, because I've got my own answers to the questions, too.
That's And I love that story. It was actually, the original story was written by Tolstoy in the 1880s, and I've shared that story with a lot of audiences, and they're very moved and touched by the story. I had to share it right after the, I remember the day I had a workshop to do on the day of the Sandy Hook Elementary School shootings, and I considered almost not telling that story, because the story is about how this moment is so precious, and the one before you, the person right standing right beside you or in front of you, is the most important person to you in that moment. And even though I did tell the story on that particular day, it brought out, I was choked up and the whole audience was, but it brought out the truth in it that nobody can really own or purchase the future, even if we'd want to. And that if we could go off autopilot and really see that person in front of us for who they are, we might see that they're such a unique person, really the most unique in the universe. If you look into somebody's eyes and you see they have 100 billion neurons, and each of those has more connections equal to all the stars in the universe, it's stunning. And so the questions that are asked in that story are, what's the best time? What's the most important time? Who are the most important people to work with? And what's the most important thing to do at all times? And as this character in the story learns, and the story is actually in the Clearing Emotional Clutter book, is he learns that the most important time is now, because this is the only moment over which we have dominion, the only moment that we can really interact with others and be present, because we don't know what's going to happen in the future. Most important person is always the person with whom you are with, who is right before you, because who knows if you'll be with any other person tomorrow or in the future. And the last thing was, what's the most important thing to do? And in the story, the most important thing is to help that person in front of you, is to be of aid to that person. And I've thought about this, and I think sometimes we can't always maybe help that person, but what we could do is we could give them our compassionate presence. We could be with them in an open, accepting, compassionate, non-judging way, and that's a wonderful gift. That's something that's within our power to give to another. So that's how I have found this story to be very important in my life, too. But, you know, everybody has a difficult person in your life, but if we could approach that person in this through this lens, it could shift. Who knows? It could really shift even that difficult relationship and at least open us up to get more curious about that person.
Right. And, you know, it's like the 12-step program says, you know, do the next right thing, which is, you know, what are we supposed to do, you know, at any given time? Well, the next right thing, you know, whatever that is in our life experience. And I like there's a shortened version of this story, you know, from the Zen tradition, which basically says whatever happens is it. And, you know, and I like that one too. In other words, whatever's happening right now is it. Embrace it, you know. You may not even like it, but that's not the point. It's here. So therefore, you've only got two choices. You can run away from it, or you can face it and embrace it. And if you can do that, it changes, doesn't it? It's transformed for you.
It does. In fact, I don't know if you've heard it, but the Marines are actually embracing mindfulness, and they're taught to embrace the suck, they call it.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah. Embrace even those things that you wish weren't in your life. And it maybe have gratitude for those too. I think of it as paradoxical gratitude almost.
Well, you know, that's how the Marines have always conducted business, isn't it? You know, the difficult we do immediately, the impossible just takes a little more time. It's the willingness to embrace the suck, you know, to say, you know, this isn't impossible. It's only impossible if we say it is. So, you know, if we could embrace it and instead of running from it, then you can achieve almost anything in life, I think.
Yeah.
So let's look at some of the other topics in the book. One of them is we've talked about speed. We talked about affluenza. You know, we could ask the question, how do you prevent new clutter coming into your life? You know, because it's constant. Every day we're being bombarded anew. You know, I may have overcome stuff from the past, but now I got all this new stuff coming at me. What's your advice there?
Oh, yeah. And the new stuff is never going to stop. It's almost like a tartar building up on your teeth, and you need to cleanse it away right in the moment. Or I call it untying the knot of clutter as it is appearing. So one example I'd like to give of that, Paul, is just getting on a freeway and all the emotion that you can get behind getting on a freeway in the morning, in rush hour, you're late, got to get somewhere, somebody cuts you off, or somebody just driving especially slow in front of you. And reacting just ties that knot even tighter. You may have a history around reacting, but if you want to untie the knot in the moment and loosen that bundle, what you can do is you can start to look at your reaction, start to notice your emotion. And if it's anger, for example, name it and actually rate it. How high is my anger on a 1 to 10 scale? Is it an 8? Wow, I came up to an 8 just because somebody cut me off here. Is that the worst thing that could happen in my life? And then just start reflecting inwardly. Once you start observing the emotion or what caused you in that moment to react, and you start looking at it in a more neutral, curious way, you've changed your relationship to it. And you're changing then your wiring in the brain. You're changing actually how you're going to respond in the future or how you're going to think about it in the future. And you may have to practice it several times, but each time you look and then reflect inwardly, you might even ask the question, so where did this anger knot of getting upset on the freeway, where did that first get started? And you could even start thinking about, how do I untie the other? You've already untied the knot in the moment because you haven't responded or reacted, or you only reacted just for a moment and you pulled back. But you could even start to think about it, and how did those other knots get tied? And eventually, you can untie that bundle of knots. And we could do this really with any thing that we react to in life. And it's about just slowly constructively distancing from it. Almost think of it as taking an elevated view. And I think that, you know, if you took the elevated view of being in the car on the freeway and somebody's cutting you off, you see, wow, there's so many people on this freeway, it's kind of chaotic. I mean, sure, somebody's going to move into my lane, and I'm not alone here. A lot of people are experiencing this. And by the way, traffic up ahead is starting to move if you had an elevated view. And, you know, this traffic jam is only temporary. It's not going to last forever.
Right.
So giving yourself an elevated perspective on anything that you're experiencing can help you almost take a breather. And the other thing I do is I take a breath. Take a nice, satisfying, long breath and exhale it out slowly. And that's a wonderful way of just coming back to this moment.
So good advice.
I would deal with untying those knots.
Well, I think sometimes we go to the serious part of our brain, you know. We're annoyed easily, we're upset, because we go to judgment, right? And I think
We
take it personally. And I think if we can get to the playful part of us that doesn't take things so seriously, then we have victory over it. You know, because I've come to use silly words on the highway sometimes that help me get, you know, instead of seeing the other person as a complete freaking idiot or whatever, I'll see them as a silly Billy or whatever. You know, what a silly Billy, what's he doing? And then it's like a game. It's almost like, well, I'm not hooked by these people anymore. They're silly Billies, you know. And I don't know if that's a phrase that's used in the States, but it's a phrase we use in Britain. And just calling people silly Billies,
I like it.
The whole sting out of it, you know, because it's They can't harm me, you know. They're not a threat to me. They're just silly Billies, and so, you know, then I can lighten up a little bit about
it's so important to lighten up in general, and that take a lighter view of things. And I knew one gentleman who would carry a clown nose with him, and when he felt he was getting too serious, he'd put his clown nose on, even if he was in public.
That reminds me of Alan Klein. He does that too. He's written a number of books on that subject.
He
calls himself the jollyologist, and he's the world's greatest jollyologist. But you know, he'll do things like that too. And it's the same idea, isn't it? It's moving to a playful part of your being where things aren't as difficult. I remember growing up in Wales back in the 50s and 60s. You know, and it was hard life for some of the people there, especially for my my grandmother, you know, grew up in real poverty back in the Depression. It's similar to some people over here. But she'd learned amazing resilience and fun, you know, and they could have fun over some, you know, they'd say, let's have a cup of tea and a bit of fun. And, you know, it was just a cup of tea, but it was the attitude of having some lightness about it. And they joke and laugh about things and you know,
that's
so
wonderful.
Didn't take it quite so seriously. And I think that, isn't that why we need talk show comedians and whatnot, you know, late show hosts, you know? It's such a beautiful valve, isn't it, to let off steam in our society. We need that humor, I think.
It's very healing. It's very
yes.
healing. Yeah, and I think it's important, as you say, to find the people who make you laugh and learn how to maybe emulate that a little bit.
When you talk about snapshots of joy, don't you, as well?
Mm. You know, I think that finding joy is really a very powerful way to experience life, and really, it's all in how we view things. And I have a little acronym for doing that, and it doesn't cost anything. That's the beauty of this. But the acronym is GLAD for glad, and you can take a daily snapshot of the G, of one gratitude that you have today, one simple little thing that you have in your life. It could be a personal gratitude. It could be professional life gratitude. It could be a relational gratitude. And so just write down one gratitude. One thing you learned today, that's the L. This could be something I learned about myself, something I learned about another, or maybe just it's fun to be curious and learn. So think about one thing you learned today. The A is for an accomplishment, and I think it's really important to think about accomplishment in terms of just the simple acts of self-care that we do for ourselves, whether it's just getting dressed in the morning or you know, getting some proper nutrition, making sure you get enough sleep and so on, or even one little baby step that moves you toward a longer-term goal. That would be an accomplishment. And the D stands for taking a mental snapshot of one thing that of delight that you experienced or saw today. So this could be something that made you smile. It could be something that made you laugh or something of beauty that you saw. Maybe it was that flower that was beginning to blossom in this springtime. So take those mental snapshots or use your phone and take a snapshot and then write those down at the end of the day, or even better, share them with another person. And I have a lot of people all around the country now who are sharing their glad snapshots in their family or with other people. And it's really a beautiful practice, because what it does is it makes you feel better. It uplifts you, and it also helps strengthen and build relationships. So it really has a tremendous benefit. It's like watering a plant, right? And we're precious plants, and it's helping us grow and experience beauty.
Beautiful. Yeah. There's a little bit of advice just before that glad snapshot practice, and that is, and I invite everybody who lives in a wet climate to enjoy this. If you don't live in a wet climate, spray some water out there, because E.E. Cummings said, the world is mudlicious and puddle wonderful. And I love that. And, you know,
that
speaks to the playfulness, doesn't it, of each moment, you know, to go splashing around. We're never too old to do silly things, are we?
Yeah. No. And I think it keeps us young at heart, and it's very important to do. And find a playmate. Find somebody who you can share that with.
That's right. Absolutely. Yeah. Folks, we're at the end of the show. If you want to get hold of this book, it's available. It's published by New World Library, but of course it's available in all the usual outlets. Donald, if people want to get in touch with you, you have a website, right?
Yeah. And I invite everybody to come to my website at mindfulpractices.com. MINDFUL practices.com. There's a newsletter there. I have a mindful living newsletter, and I'd love for you to sign up for that. And you'll once a month, I have new mindfulness practices for clearing clutter and doing reflections and also information on new workshops and things that I'm doing.
Sweet. In 10 seconds, tell us one thing we can do right now.
Breathe. take a nice conscious breath. And if you stop breathing, take another breath.
take a pill, and get yourself to the ER.
Yeah, right.
All right, with the end of the show, let me tell you about next week's show, and then we'll say goodbye to Donald. And next week, Linda and Charlie Bloom join me. They're going to discuss their new book. It's called, and it really piggybacks nicely on what we discussed today. It's entitled Happily Ever After and 39 Other Myths About Love. There we go. Happily Ever After and 39 Other Myths About Love. I'm sure they've got some good positive things in that book as well. But we do live by those myths instead of by reality sometimes. And as Donald has pointed out in his wonderful book. So thanks to Donald for being with us today. It's been a joy.
Well, same here, Paul. Bless you for the work that you're doing, and you're really touching a lot of people's lives, and bless your audience, too.
All right. Thank you. Yeah, and thanks for listening, guys, and tune in next week. Bye now.
Thank you for tuning in to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach. Join us every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Central to further examine the spiritual teachings and religious traditions of our world and to discover the universal truth principles present in all. World Spirituality, only on UnityOnlineRadio.org, the voice of an awakening world. This program is brought to you in part by Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas, celebrating the Christ Spirit in all people. Online at www.unityfortworth.org.
At Metaphysical Romp 2, we demystify metaphysics to help you live life at a deeper level. One of our key principles is the recognition that you always have the power to choose how you respond to any situation. Instead of asking, why did this happen to me? A better practice, which aligns with the metaphysical principles we share, is to ask yourself the question, how can I use this for good? We promise you'll experience a transformation in thinking that will reap huge dividends as you master the art of living metaphysically. For new perspective and spiritual insight, listen to Metaphysical Romp 2 with co-hosts Reverend Paul Hasselbeck, Reverend Bill Holton, and Reverend Cher Holton. Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Central Time here on Unity Online Radio.
In the midst of a hurricane, there is a center of stillness that remains intact despite the violent winds raging around it. This fact of Mother Nature points to a similar truth in human nature. Even as I encounter the inevitable storms of life, there remains within me a place of peace. Although I can't always control what happens around me, I can choose to stay centered in an awareness of who I am and how I respond. According to Gardner Hunting, peace is an atmosphere of the heart and has nothing to do with environment or circumstance. So when I'm caught up in a whirlwind of chaos and conflict, I turn within for better weather. Peace is always there. Peace can begin with me.
To find a Unity Church near you, please visit our website at www.unity.org.
Notice that there might be something not quite right, but you just can't put your finger on it? We may describe it as an inner stirring, a restlessness, a yearning to find our way home to our heart and higher purpose. Some of us may feel like we are living on borrowed time, that despite our accomplishments, what was once so important to us now just feels empty and meaningless. If you find your heart longing, wanting, Looking for a path home to authenticity and purpose? Join us for transformation, inspiration, hope, and possibility. Move toward your higher calling. Listen to The Call of Spirit with Evelyn Forman and tune in to Possibility every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Central Time here on Unity Online Radio.
Sometimes you feel so alone and overwhelmed, you don't know where to turn. These days, it seems like there is no end to our problems. We invite you to connect with Silent Unity, the 24-hour prayer ministry where someone is waiting to pray with you right now. Since 1890, Silent Unity has always been there. No judgment or dogma, just someone affirming the best for you. Call 816-969-2000 today. You can also connect online at unityprayervigil.org.